This program is brought to you by Jewel, sous vide by Chef Steps. Jewel takes the guesswork out of cooking. Learn more at chefsteps.com/joule.
I'm HRN's Communications Director Kat Johnson with a preview of this week's episode of Meat in Three.
I think we should realize that we more or less have a broken food system. When 800 million of us go to bed hungry, 600 million are obese, we waste 30% of our food, then something is fundamentally wrong.
We'll introduce you to one food waste solution happening in Asia.
They introduced a system where residents were issued an electronic ID card that would open an automated bin and enable them to weigh the food waste being dropped off. And then they would be charged, you know, in a certain amount of money for the weight of that food.
And we'll take a look at some of the real struggles happening closer to home.
How is it possible that a meal that was perfectly fine to consume at 10:59 p.m. then becomes waste at 11 p.m.
So tune in to this week's Meat in Three on Heritage Radio Network, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you some.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte.
My name is Souther T.
Hey, Souther.
How you doing, buddy?
Great. It is so great. Chill, man.
It is so chill.
So chill.
Yes. Some traveling under our belts. Yeah. Some southern states for me. Some California for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lots of Big Sur.
Turn that
stuff
off.
Like that.
Everybody else
knows
the
same.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, that's it.
Everything's been pretty chill. Just traveling a bunch and, yeah. It's good to see you. Good to be back in New York.
Yeah, man.
And we're actually doing a we're not in the studio today.
That's right, so we're kind of traveling too. Though we're here in the city, we're not at the studio where we normally are. And our guests are definitely traveling all the way from the little isle of Puerto Rico, from a bar called La Penultima.
That's right.
Oh, sorry.
That's right.
I'm hearing myself. Stephen, Chris, and Penelope, right?
Penelope? That's correct, yeah.
Absolutely.
Welcome, team.
Thanks.
Thank
glad
you,
to be here.
What are you guys doing in town?
We were coming up here for a little pop-up at Leyenda. Penelope here.
Yeah. Used to work at a Leyenda, and
part of the opening team, right?
Part of the opening team, and we had Ivy come and do a little pop-up herself. So
yeah, she
we
had
thought
a great guest shift a couple months back.
Absolutely. Yeah. Do a little trade and show Puerto Rico, show Penultima some love, and just rock the night, get some people in. And
exactly. We're coming up on the one-year anniversary of that hurricane. It's just kind of like going to throw some Dunkew cocktails, like just represent Puerto Rico and, you know, just have a good time tomorrow.
Yep. It's a little bit of a homecoming for you too, right, Penelope?
Yeah.
It's been a year since I've been back to New York, and I lived here for 10 years, and it's a little... It's overwhelming. It's melancholic, actually. It's lots of changes
in
the city.
So does that mean you moved down right before the storm?
Technically, I moved to Puerto Rico a year ago in May. Okay. And then, you know, a few months after, Maria happened. So I lived through all of that.
Yeah, of course.
And I worked for a little bit at Factoria and Jungle Bird bars in Puerto Rico. And then happily stumbled into this magical place of Penultima, this oasis, I call it, of awesome. Post-Maria.
Yeah, the storm really changed our bar. And
it changed everything.
It changed
in Puerto
everything,
Rico,
yeah.
Really. But somehow we persevered. I mean, we have a really amazing team, and we had a lot of resources at our disposal, a generator, luckily, that we were able to wire up. And the bar transformed. We were about a year old when the storm hit, and we kind of became a community center. At first, we were a very industry-focused bar, really late nights.
Yeah, we weren't open until 6 p.m., and, you know, just very industry-focused, like, you know, more elevated cocktail program.
But yeah, then, it was a lot of, like, an after-hours joint for a lot of other bartenders and people, cooks. It's most of our friends down there, so. Mm-hmm. But after the storm hit, everything changed, you know. We basically just... we all flocked to the bar. Like, everybody did, all the employees. And because fortunately, we still had running water, and miraculously, our Wi-Fi still worked.
Yeah, that was a big thing.
Yeah. I mean, also, historically, you know, bars are public houses. They're the place you go when you have nowhere else to go, and I assume a lot of people had nowhere else to go.
Absolutely.
It's the place I go when I have other places to go.
Yeah, that's true, too. And also, again, if you had power and Wi-Fi, I'm certain you were kind of a beacon.
Oh, because I'm sure there were a lot of people who, like, families, like, their families were wanting to get in contact with them, make sure they're okay. So
that was the big thing.
I'm sure people were probably sharing.
Well, you know,
it was a week after the storm. The governor couldn't even talk to 7 of the town's mayors. So for us to have fiber optic internet that worked, you know, we were directly across the street from the hub. That's the only reason we had internet, because that one cable didn't fall down.
Yep, and the radios, one of the radio stations was like, if you need to get in touch with your friends and family, this is a place to go, which happens to be right across the street from Penalty.
Yeah.
So we had internet while everybody was just getting in touch, and everybody could actually work too. You know, people that either work remotely or needed their computers, they had access to internet and access to
We set up a charging station in the bar. I wired the bar in, so the outlets on the exterior of the bar still works, so people just could charge things. I mean, even medical devices.
I mean, we were charging people's like wheelchairs and shit. It was crazy.
Yeah, that's tremendous. Yeah. When we had Sandy here in New York, and all of Lower Manhattan was in the dark for a week, people were walking up to 20th Street so they could plug in their phone. So it's great that your place of a bar that already is a gathering place became like a real community center and gathering place during a time of crisis.
Right.
And that changed your evolution.
We couldn't even sell alcohol afterwards. It was 10 days without any alcohol, too. So it was really just that. A place for people to, like, get on the internet and let people know they're okay.
There's a dry law usually.
There was a dry law in effect for 10 days after the storm.
Mm-hmm. So people had cabin fever. They need to get out.
It was hash browns and drinkable water, you know?
What was the dry law about? Like,
just to keep people off the streets, keep people sober. Like, things were dangerous. Yeah. There's a lot of flooding.
No power, so no street lights, you know?
The government basically didn't want people going out getting drunk. And what's the first thing you want to do after a traumatic, you know, experience?
Yeah, seriously.
I'm going to fucking pound some shots and, you know, have some beers, but... Yeah. You know?
And when you don't have, you know, when you don't have clean drinking water, a beer is a form of hydration, especially a Medaya.
It's protein.
Medaya or local, like 3% alcohol beer, drink those all day.
Well, sure. I mean, you know, the whole world went through the phase of where water was definitely more dangerous than beer.
Yep.
So you drank beer instead of water.
Must be real. Like, we didn't sell beer, but people were drinking plenty in the store. We couldn't sell it, but people were drinking it.
So you were describing that you were kind of a late night, more industry focused, quote unquote, serious bar or serious program, I think you said. What changed after the storm?
I think we really became a neighborhood bar. You know, we met our neighbors. You know, a lot of people maybe never came in. We opened really low key, didn't really have a sign for the first few months.
Right.
But we met all of our neighbors. And now we continue to be open during the daytime too, which is a big thing. Mm-hmm. We now open at 11 o'clock as opposed to 6 o'clock. So we're there for lunch, and we're just, these neighbors that we met during the storm, they keep coming in.
We kept the hours.
There's a senior living facility across the street, and now we taught them to love daiquiris, and it's kind of amazing, you know?
That's amazing.
Man, when we opened the bar, I was so worried about the senior living center. I thought we were going to get noise complaints, calls all the time, but they love us
now.
It became a fixture. They were able to keep their insulin cold.
Yeah, they came for ice to keep their insulin.
Yeah. So it changed the bar, and it's a community thing. We still really care about the cocktails we serve and everything.
Yeah,
like,
of course.
You know, but like it opened the doors to all sorts of different kinds of people, and it's made it that much more enjoyable, dynamic, and exciting just to like see the people that come in there. You have like, you know, people who are on senior assisted living drinking like, you know, like light beers over ice with a straw next to like, you know, 20 something hipsters doing, you know, cocktails and shots or whatever. And it's just, it's beautiful, really. It's really a cool scene.
Yeah. And it's a craft cocktail bar with, you know, food, good bar food.
Yeah.
Also draft beer, a little wine.
Yeah.
But you know, we are high volume right now. It is busy, but when it gets busy, it gets intense. It's a big bar to run through and like make, you know, 50, 60 cocktails in like a course of an hour. So we get an influx of people coming in, and it's great.
Like, you'd mentioned before that it's kind of like, obviously it's like kind of the community center, like it's like the place that was like essential for everyone to go and hang out and like seek refuge and like charge their phones and, you know, charge their wheelchairs and stuff like that. What, I'm trying to like get my head around, like, is it the same with like you said it's an industry place. How many places are like, is it in an area of town where there's like a huge concentration of bars and restaurants?
Yeah. Okay. It's not really in a more touristy area. It's in the neighborhoods of Santurce, but around the corner from us is this area called La Placita, which is kind of a bigger nightlife area. There's a lot of live music out there. Mm-hmm. There's a little like market where we buy most of our limes and pineapples and whatever, you know, local fruit we can find there. But in the night, it kind of transforms into like a, you know, it's like the salsa industry, people walking around. But we're a little bit off the corner on the, from that. I'm kind of a main drag cutting through the city. So.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
We gotta go. We gotta visit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Please. Yeah, the crazy part is
it's a 3-hour flight.
Have you been to Puerto Rico?
Yeah, I've never been. No.
Me neither.
And it's cheap to get out there, too, man.
I do, actually. Yeah.
You do?
Yeah. Wow. I grew up on a beach in Florida.
Yeah, great. Yeah.
We'll take you to the west side. That's where everybody
some
goes.
Some world-class surfing on the west side.
Okay, slow down.
Our listeners don't even know us, but like, I'm in no shape to surf.
I think I got 2-foot swell.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Is there a white diamond area? We're looking for black diamonds in it. So what prompted you to go and open in Puerto Rico in the first place?
Man, I moved down there 10 years ago.
You're expats, right?
Yeah, we grew up in Rockford, Illinois, which is, you know, a little west of Chicago. And I'll make a long story real, real short. Basically, graduated high school, didn't know what I wanted to do. Went to Guatemala, lived in Guatemala City for 2 years, ran out of money. Back to Chicago, started working in a Mexican restaurant and for an NGO called La Voz Latina. And La Voz Latina is basically just like helping out like new Mexican immigrants and Central American immigrants, hook them up with the ESL, legal help, that kind of thing. My boss at the time was Puerto Rican, and I was trying to finish my education degree so I could keep working in this NGO. And then, you know, it was just like, you know, school in the States is expensive. So he's like, just go to Puerto Rico. You can get fast with Pell Grants, you can do it on the cheap. So I did, you know, my second 2 years of my bachelor in San Juan. Started doing student teaching, and I hated it. I don't recommend it. If anyone out there fucking wants to be a teacher and you love it, the world needs you, man. I was weak and I couldn't do it, so decided to sign for their semester
classes.
Well,
the hours are long, but at least the pay is cheap.
For the record, Chris's Spanish is really, really good.
Thank you.
I love talking to Chris in Spanish. And it's a Puerto Rican Spanish, too.
Hey, we'll do a Spanish language podcast next. Heritage can do something.
Yeah, we're overdue.
Anyway, I just signed for their semester classes, took out the biggest student loan I could, withdrew from my classes, kept the money, and opened a bar.
Yeah. There you go.
All right. This is a government funded bar.
Loans are paid off, eh?
This is a different bar you opened, though.
Yeah, La Penultima was pretty new. It's only been about 2 years. I opened a craft beer bar in Old San Juan first. That was back in 2010. That did really well. We grew, we moved to a new location. And then I opened a Thai restaurant about 4 years ago with my wife. And we're doing Thai food. It's a gin focused bar program there. We're doing our own tonic water and stuff. Pretty simple on the cocktail side, but, you know, through the Thai restaurant, we made a lot of relationships with farmers in the area, too. We started getting a lot of our Thai basil, the chilies, the lemongrass, stuff that's not typical in Puerto Rican cuisine at all, and there was no Thai restaurants in the entire metro area. So we started getting this great relationship with these farmers, and that's, like, through that, they started bringing us, like, awesome local fruits, like quintembilla, which is, like, Puerto Rican cranberries, like, really cool citrus, like, really amazing passion fruit. And my brother would come down and spend like maybe 1 month a year, every year for the past 10 years with me.
To four, depending on
minimum.
My year.
Yeah.
So I was living in Chicago at the time, but bouncing back and forth and falling more and more in love with Puerto Rico every time. And basically, even when you were opening La Terra Lupulo, we were always talking about working together. I was always uncommitted. But, you know, didn't really know if I had the experience and the knowledge base that to run a spot.
None of us did, but we had the passion we just really wanted to do something cool and, like, live a good life.
Yeah, but through years bouncing back and forth between Chicago, bartending here and there, and also doing some woodworking. I worked for a furniture shop, too, and we were doing bar build-outs. So I was gaining all this experience doing, like, the actual construction of things. And we got to a point where we just wanted to pull the trigger and do something. We found really
awesome. He's modest. He's an incredible carpenter.
did everything in
the bar. He spent a year in Maine learning how to build wooden boats. He built a harp from scratch. So yeah. This, if I'm going to open a bar to anybody, it's going to be my little brother. We're brothers. We're 18 months apart. You know, we grew up with working with each other, and it was just like, it was perfect.
The relationships were set up.
Let's do a third bar.
We knew all the distributors. Yeah. I had a cocktail. Shout out to Dave Arnold on Cooking Issues. Listening to Cooking Issues when doing furniture was a big inspiration of why I thought I could do this.
There's a reason he's allowing liquid nitrogen at the bar.
Yeah.
And, thanks, Dave.
Lots of science involved at Penultima.
It's out though, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah? Does the program lean towards that sort of like...
I'd say so molecular.
Absolutely.
We have two centrifuges. I have a big bench top 3-liter swinging bucket, and I got a new dispenser all now. We use liquid nitrogen.
CO2.
Yeah.
Carbonated.
I'd say our cocktails kind of shifted from being more in like techie style, like more elevated to kind of a nice middle ground right now. Just after the storm, a big problem after Maria was a lot of these local farms were destroyed.
Yeah,
so even finding local produce is still hard. So we were doing a lot of produce-centric, a lot of fruit-centric cocktails, a lot of like, you know, clarified citrus and things, and like, you know, justinos or whatever.
Oh, even coconuts haven't grown back yet. It's like,
it's
hard to find an avocado too.
Yeah. But, so we skirt that line, but I think very analytically when I think about cocktails. I like it. It helps me be consistent and keeps everyone on the same page, mm-hmm. so. I try to use as much analytical tools as possible, you know, in crafting our syrups, anything like that too.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
I just eyeball everything, man.
Yeah.
Hey, that's a pro move right there.
That's why it works out between Steven and I creating cocktails, because like I start with a little base, and then he comes in with his like, you know, little background, little science background, and it just kind of works. Like we do really work. Really well together.
Yeah, it's been a good year.
Yeah,
a good year since Maria has passed. So that's
well, yeah. I was gonna say, I mean, like the community coming together after the storm, it must have like really like bonded your team. You know, like
absolutely,
even more than just, you know, the community having everyone like when you have that like call to action. You know, when you're like, all right, fuck it, we're opening up all damn day and people can sleep here and charge their phones and
exactly.
stuff. I mean, like,
Everybody has stepped up in a big way, man.
It's like, it takes, I think in the idea of hospitality, it's like taking yourself out of, a lot of the times it's taking yourself out of the equation. It's not about you, it's about like the experience. And that's like the most like selfless thing you could do is open your doors and like help people out, you know? So like that really bonds the team as well.
Of course, that's what hospitality is all about.
We became a family, you know?
Yeah.
Regulars included.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. And that's when it's really working, right? That's when it's clicking on all cylinders.
Yeah.
Is when your guests become part of the family itself. So we'll take a quick break so we can get some station identification. We'll come right back with the team from Penultima.
And some rum, too.
And some rum.
Yeah.
Cheers, guys. So we'll just pause for a minute and pour some rum. I want to try that one.
Okay,
great.
I want that one.
The highest proof one you got.
We'll have this
Bob's
one.
Red Mill is good.
I love it. It's delicious. I love it and it's delicious, and we had it because of Giancarlo. I already had Mancino Vermouth on my bar, and then when Mia Leach stopped by, she was like, oh, she goes, you have Mancino? We have a rum that's in the
Leach.
And I was like, bring it on.
Really?
She's moving back to Puerto Rico.
Oh, she is?
October 1st. She's going to be back down. Yeah, she's going to be...
San Juan Hotel
bar beverage director. For 11 different bars there. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, we're super excited.
I'm excited
to have
her. She's fun hanging out with.
Yes.
She's amazing.
This program is brought to you by Jewel Sous Vide. My name is Katie Mosman-Wadler. I'm the executive director of HRN and a real-life Jewel user. I use Jewel to help me host the most delicious dinner parties. When you cook with Jewel, there's zero guesswork. So steak, chicken, seafood, turkey, vegetables, and eggs all come out exactly the way you like them. The Paired app is super intuitive and has a great visual doneness guide. Jewel is awesome for prepping many perfect portions, making it easy to cook for a crowd. And it's hands-free, so you can focus on entertaining while Jewel does the work. And pro tip, Jewel is also great for travel. I throw mine in my suitcase if I'm headed to a rental house with any kind of uncertain kitchen. From perfect steak to juicy, tender Thanksgiving turkey, Jewel makes the best food you've ever tasted. Just be sure to save some room for mini jars of pumpkin pie. Jewel, perfect food every time. To get yours, visit chefsteps.com/Jewel and use code HRN, as in Heritage Radio Network, to get $15 off for a limited time. That's chefsteps.com/JOULE, code HRN.
And we are back. You're listening to The Speakeasy on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. And we have rum now.
Now we have rum. Talk to us about what you poured here, Penelope.
Well, this is the Santa Ana. It's an actual high-proof rum that comes from the family of Ron Hacienda. And they used to, they actually make rum de Barilito. And they came out with this product, and it will blow your mind.
Barilito is kind of a cult favorite in the industry. And I know it's available in certain bars around New York and Chicago, a couple of other cities around the States. But it's just this old family that has been buying rum from other distilleries and aging themselves. And they finally came out with this overproof version that I think is really fantastic, actually. It doesn't taste as hot as the proof would.
And as we were talking, like, it's 138 proof. As the inconsistency.
139. But it smells really fresh.
Yeah, it is. You like get a lot of vanilla on it, and just like...
Weirdly, I'm getting like cucumber.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Am I crazy for smelling
that? No, yeah, that's an interesting note, though.
I mean, tasted it, but it just smells like wet and fresh.
Yeah, I get that. So, yeah, I mean, we know Barilito,
yeah,
for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Was this made for the Puerto Rico market, or was it made for like...
This just came out on August 31st. It's about 2 weeks old at the time of recording.
Because, I mean, like... You know, we really like our cast strength shit here. So,
yeah, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It seems like something that would have been made for, like...
So, I mean, just real quickly, Barilito, being family-owned and everything, that story is over now. Joaquin Bacardi, not the Bacardi Corporation, but the man himself, bought a controlling stake in Barilito, and they're changing some things. They're building a big visitor center. They're expanding, and coming out new products. So this is the first thing that comes out. The next one's going to be a 3-star, which
five
is...
5-star.
No, 5-star, sorry, yeah. 5-star. But $750. They're trying to be. That's not. I'm not gonna hate.
Yeah.
But I got some feelings.
Because up till now it's been like. I hear that.
Yeah, yeah.
But up until now it's been like the 2-star or the 3-star, right?
Correct.
It's like,
that's correct.
That's all they've ever released, basically.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, it's delicious, man. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it is delicious. So that aroma quickly gets attacked by tons of vanilla on the palate, a little bit of toast, mm-hmm. and then just some...
Oh man, stick this in a piña colada, you're going to have a good afternoon.
Yeah, there's a little bit of ice on the bar here, if you want to grab some.
If you guys come down to visit, we'll stick this in a piña colada for you. Absolutely,
yeah. Piña colada. Yeah.
Sure, why not? With some overproof rum? There you go.
I think that's what a piña colada needs, right?
Yeah, right?
That's it. Cut through all that coconut cream action.
Mm-hmm.
This is delightful. Thanks for bringing it.
Yeah, of course. Happy to share it with you guys.
It's nice. We basically just drive to the to the warehouse like once a month at least and grab the cases.
Exactly.
It's just nice. It's nice that we can literally go there and we buy it right in the
That's
the
true. We don't buy from a distributor. We buy it directly from the blenders themselves.
And
yeah.
We go through a lot of it because
we do this
Schaefer and Barilito combo.
Yeah.
For
yeah,
$5.
Wait,
Schaefer beer in a 10-ounce can.
Schaefer's the one beer to have when you're having more than one.
That's right.
Wait, yes. What year was that? Like 70 something?
Jesus, no, that was in the 60s. Maybe.
Yeah.
That was their slogan back then.
Anybody out there interested? Google, look on YouTube for old Schaefer ads.
Find some beer. I don't know if we mentioned that where we are.
God, we should have brought six back to Schaefer.
We should have brought Maya too.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we missed that one.
Damon just said we should have mentioned where we are. We're not at the studio, but we're here at my bar, Blue Quarter, in the East Village of New York City. Just because it's the afternoon and it's quiet and we could use this space to set up our recording equipment. So Damon just said, is there beer? Of course we have beer. Now he's off behind the bar now. where he feels most comfortable. And look, he's very speedy.
Look at that. Oh, yeah. Perfect.
The closest, the $5 thing. Shot combo. Right
as a
now.
Guy who's never been behind that bar, he raced back there and got five beers pretty quick.
Oh, dude, I can sniff them out.
And something that sounds as good on the radio as this, right?
The sound that lost a thousand shares.
Salud.
All right, team. So that's some delicious Narragansett. Hi, neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big fan of all the slogans of older beers.
Absolutely.
They had the barbershop. They had a barbershop quartet in their commercials, and they're saying, "Schaefer is the one beer to have when you're having more than one." Nice. Which you couldn't get away with now, right? You see a commercial now, and it's like 12 dudes playing volleyball, and they're sharing a six-pack.
Exactly.
You can't talk about having more than one. One, maybe not even one.
Well, it's a very appropriate beer because of that, because our bar is called La Penultima. And
Right.
Our bar is called La Penultima porque...
It's an old Spanish refrán that's a saying, basically. That's like, you know, when you order your last beer from the bartender, your last drink from the bartender respond, no, es la penultima. It's the penultimate. The last one you order is the one before you die. There's always another drink to be had.
You never have a last beer.
Yeah.
Or a last drink.
Yeah. We can last one for last. Tonight, but, you know, it's your penultimate.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I love it. That reminds me kind of the old charter, the whiskey old charter. Their old saying was the whiskey that doesn't watch the clock. Kind of reminds me of that.
Sure.
As well.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, the whole Penultima thing has like a level of optimism in it that I really like too. It's fun and it's great because it's something you don't hear that much anymore. And a lot of our older guests from the elderly center across the street, they love it because they remember that.
Yep. And then they walk in and find Schaefer at our bar, which used to be one of the major beers of Puerto Rico. It was the best selling back in the 80s and before Budweiser came down, or 70s, before Budweiser and Coors came down. So a lot of these, the older generation are like shocked to see it. It's not really seen around the island.
Is that Schaefer?
Yeah.
Well, you know,
they get excited. Yeah,
it is pretty crazy. When you go to you know, like dive bars or even like the kind of like nouveau dive bars like that are in New York City, like Skinny Dennis and Rock-A-Rolla, they're Lucky Dog, like all those places, they're really into like old, like we call it Breweriana, like memorabilia, like old signs and stuff. But like Schaefer put so much money into promoting their brand. I mean, you can find old Schaefer neon lights and signs, and stuff. Everywhere, but then you never see the beer anywhere.
Yeah, sure.
Isn't that crazy?
It's like all the stuff is the ephemera.
They spend all their money on promotion and not distribution.
But I feel like we're I feel like we're looping back around into those kind of things a lot. And as you said, the older set sees it and they get excited. I get excited when I see stuff like that too. I was at Pop Fest in Kansas City recently, and I walked into many bars there have Schlitz.
Sure.
Either in a can or in a bottle, and only
it's
one
big Wisconsin right now too.
Only one bar in all of Kansas City has a right of first refusal. There's only one bar that has Schlitz on tap.
Oh yeah.
And I was at the Rieger with Brian Levy.
Oh.
And they serve frosty cold in the branded Schlitz Pilsner glasses like you used to see in the day.
Oh,
like,
man,
is legitimate. And I'm that guy too. I see these older beers and I'm like, I gotta have that.
Yeah, of course. Like,
you know,
of course.
I want a Hams, I want a Schlitz.
It's like when you go to Yankee Stadium, there's like a beer cart that's all like vintage beers. I'm doing air quotes right now. But yes, it's like Schlitz and Schaefer and like Old Style and like Olympia.
Yeah. They all taste the same, but they look great. They feel great to hold in your hand.
Yeah,
you know.
Totally.
Yeah, everybody calls them lawnmower beers. I call them hammock beers because I'm not looking to fuck with that lawnmower.
You don't like mowing lawns?
I'll watch you from the hammock.
Have you done it as an adult?
As an adult, I've never lived anywhere with a lawn.
Well,
sure.
The thing is, like, if you mow a lawn nowadays.
You hold the Budweiser.
And it's being of drinking age.
Okay, there we go. There's the difference.
Man, you will really appreciate that beer.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's earned.
Those bits of the bits of grass in the beer.
Yeah, and you're just like you're dripping sweat, and so it's kind of like salty
dressed beer.
It's dry. Yeah, it's,
you have to go try the beach sometime. Yeah. It's even better at the beach.
Yeah,
there you go.
Lawn tincture.
Yeah, yeah, it's a lawn tincture. We can draw some grass and some Everclear.
A scent of grass.
So this is like, I mean, I know we're talking about your bar being a cocktail bar or anything, but like I'm just like, this is the shift drink, right?
You know, yeah,
like
of course.
This is shift drink. Yeah. If you're a shot.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
At a Boilermaker at the end of the night.
We have a lot of really great restaurants that are a block away from us. Santa Aja, our friends from Bianda, which just opened. The chef from Bianda, Francis, worked at Blue Hill here in New York. Hmm. They're doing some really cool stuff. And all their staff, you know, they're making the best elevated. They're making amazing food. What are they going to drink before a shift or after? They want to shave for a shot.
Right in the middle.
You know?
Yeah. Right in the middle.
Yeah, right in the middle.
I mean, like, I don't...
I'll tell you this. I was a chef for 12 years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I worked at some very nice and refined places. And our thing, and I was just reminded of this recently by my buddy Eric Castro. After work, all the chefs, all of us, we would go to whatever nearest dive bars, and of course we were going to have a beer and whiskey. But honestly, the first thing we would have, and honestly, you'd order it together sometimes.
Yeah.
First thing, vodka soda. Mm-hmm. I want a solvent and some bubbles to clean my palate.
Yeah, yeah.
Sure. We pound that vodka soda, and then we move into the beer and shot, kind of relax.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I want that cleanser first, that,
I like that
true break the palate, like an intermezzo.
Cool.
I like that.
Mm-hmm. Bubbles, yeah, so that's like scrubbing mm-hmm. and solvent from the vodka, like down she goes.
I love serving vodka sodas. You know, we've got a really good carbonation system, and
that's
you know,
a hammock drink too, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's no shame. Yeah.
Steven here built an amazing carbonation system. It's right on tap, comes right out of the bar.
Perrier is
like a big thing in Puerto Rico, and I tell them, like when someone asks for like a Perrier and soda, and I'm like, well, we have a carbonated water made in-house, and I think it's better than the Perrier you drink every day.
It definitely has more bubbles, and that's
that's for sure.
Yeah,
that's the selling point. Yes. So you have a vodka soda on tap?
A soda on tap and some cold vodka.
Yeah, unfortunately, batching is not allowed in Puerto Rico. There's a lot of really weird little rules we have to work around.
I mean,
there's also
a
lot of leniency that we can. Yeah,
it's not allowed here. What we've discovered here, certainly in my time, because we were the first people at Amore Margo, we've had kegged cocktails since the day we opened, and we got taken to court for it, and we battled in court,
really?
And we sort of won, which
means
that now other people can do it.
Well, that was because of, they were saying that it was something about the ABV, and like it was inconsistent because of the densities of the different ingredients, right? Like someone would sink.
That's
but then if it's carbonated, then
exactly.
due to brownie emotion,
exactly.
it's constantly mixing.
Wow.
But they didn't bite on that either. They still made us prove that we could make it move by using a magnetic stirrer.
That's
but
crazy.
Because we did that, it changed the interpretation or the spirit of the law, right? The letter of the law versus the spirit of the law. Because, in fact, I don't know if you know this, we found this out when we were in court 7 years ago. Hmm. In New York, anyway.
Frank Cisneros was part of this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In New York, anyway, you know, it's different state to state because of, you know, stupid federal law. Let every state choose how they want to deal with things. But in New York, you can't move any spirit from the bottle that it came in into any vessel prior to the drinking vessel. Meaning, I can't put spirits in this Yarai mixing glass before it goes into your glass unless I'm serving from the Yarai. Everything into the vessel, then into a glass, that's a no-no.
Oh, wow.
This was to protect the consumer and the maker, right? But it makes no sense today. So spirit of law versus letter of law, no one enforces that.
Sure.
So when we showed them that you can move this liquid inside the keg with the magnetic stirrer, and then we immediately boxed that $3,000 ordinance up and sent it back and got a refund, they don't care. They're never going to come check again. It's just like,
we get
it. It can be done.
Right.
Spirit of the law versus letter of the law.
Man, I know somebody in San Juan who got fined $10,000 for making a pitcher of sangria.
In Puerto Rico?
Yeah.
That's considered batching a pitcher.
Yeah. Making sangria. How else do you make sangria without letting the wine and rum soak in the fruit? Like, it's just no other way to do it.
Dang.
Yeah, there's a lot of really weird things like that. I mean, there's like...
You got to be pretty careful.
It's pretty easy to buy yourself a law if you're a large company with some money behind it. I mean, hell, the small craft brewers we work with, we have 12 taps and we like to put local beers on tap. But our local beers are more expensive than anything imported because it costs $2.55 a gallon in taxes to brew beer in Puerto Rico. Not to mention the incredible utility costs and shipping to get on the ingredients and... But, you know, and the government will not lower that tax.
Nope.
Dang. It's the highest in the U.S. D.C., wow. I think, is second at like $1.55. So it's a dollar more than D.C. to brew beer in Puerto Rico.
Wow.
So there's no breweries in Puerto Rico.
But then
there are good ones.
I know it's not really a beer podcast. I own a craft beer bar, too. It's not really a beer podcast. But, yeah, there's some guys doing some really cool stuff.
We were just down in outside of Ponce.
But they're having to bear that brunt. And so that means
the
cost of their goods is...
They're not making any money.
Well, that is beer brewed, not beer sold. Too.
Right.
So that is, if you
all
make
included.
If a batch doesn't turn out, you're still paying tax.
You're still paying tax on it. If you dump it, if you put it all down the drain, you're still paying that tax.
So I would be fucked. Yeah. You know, I mess up pretty much every batch of anything I try. Right.
But for every like bureaucratic headache, there's some like really great things about running a bar. From like the legal standpoint, just like the administrative standpoint in Puerto Rico too, there's no closing law. We could be open 24/7 if you wanted to be.
Yeah, that's pretty rad.
Liquor licenses are basically free, but the liquor is a lot, costs a lot. So it balances out though. Ooh. But it makes it doable. But it allows it so anybody can kind of get the market. Anybody can kind of go open a bar there. I opened my first bar for $12,000. You can't do that here.
$12,000.
Yeah, we opened with beach coolers, literal beach coolers with ice.
That's fucking rad, man.
Right?
That's what it's all about.
Yep. Yeah. And it was the first of its kind to serve craft beer in Puerto Rico. So.
So it works out.
That came out quickly.
I mean, liquor licenses are $500 a year.
Do you think there was a pour on there?
It wants you.
Mm-hmm.
So we're
returning. Yeah, so we're drinking the next rum now, right?
Yeah.
We're moving to Doncu by Distillería Cereis.
Doncu.
Yeah, this is the Vincino Vermouth cask.
I think it's the second run of those casks.
Yeah.
Don Q is like, it's like, we're typically seeing like the Don Q that you'd find in like the Well, right? I mean, mm-hmm. This is like more like a higher end, elevated version.
So they're stepping it up. They recently hired a new master blender, recently, meaning five years ago. That's pretty recent.
in the world of spirits, I think that's pretty recent.
He used to be the master blender for Santa Teresa in Venezuela. Mm-hmm. Did a little bit of time working in Panama, and then came to Puerto Rico with this incredible knowledge and a will to make really cool stuff. And the leadership and the at Cerrais, which is Don Q, the company that owns it, is allowing him to do really interesting, innovative things. This is one of them. We got a sneak peek of what's coming out next that we're not allowed to talk about, but there's some cool things coming down the line.
It's a really old company, too.
Like, and they're doing really cool things for the island. They're really... making a huge effort to be power neutral. They have
their own aqueduct.
They have their own aqueduct, and they're taking
really
care
good water
of the river.
Cleaning programs. Yeah.
The guy swore to us because I thought, I mean, the senile nihilist in me thought that like, oh, there's no way, there's no caramel. You win 50 in this. The guy was adamant that no, not even
completely
in the
Añejo.
Yeah, it's all the barrels, and it's a cool operation. It's very small. It's locally owned, and really employs a lot of people in what would otherwise be an abandoned industrial town on the south coast of Puerto Rico. So I'm happy to support them. I really.
And also they did a lot of work to help people out during Maria
absolutely.
And after.
Absolutely,
for sure they sent some bartenders from there to New York City.
They
That's
did.
Right.
Yes.
They did. A lot of some of our staff got free plane tickets and were set up with jobs around here.
You worked with Yvonne and Mario.
Yeah.
As a direct result of that.
At Coup, yeah.
Yeah.
That's
and then they were also doing the... There's a spot in the old Bourgeois Pied.
Yeah, that was part of Coup. That was called.
It was, but what was it called?
And Carroll Gardens, right?
El Puente. Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah,
it was
cool.
The bridge. So Coup had its run at Astor, 6 months over there, and then we had a 3 month gap in anything going on at that space out in Carroll Gardens. So we grabbed these two dudes who were in town, and we helped them find a place to stay, and we. Basically just threw them the keys and said we'll do a coup mini pop-up over there and donate all the money back to Puerto Rico.
Yeah,
it was around that time that we were lucky enough to hire Penelope.
Yeah, and it was really fun.
It was a good opportunity.
And these guys are also they're also kind of a forward-thinking in some ways in that they like to do some experimentation. So this what we're drinking is their double aged rum. It's vermouth cask finished, and it's finished in a Mancino vermouth cask, which is unusual, right? Nobody really does that in Puerto Rico.
No.
So this is
we don't even get that vermouth distributed there.
Yeah, yeah.
And buy it there.
Salud.
Salud.
So it's Giancarlo Mancino, who's been on the show with us before, some of his casks. And actually at Amore Margo, I've got a cocktail on the menu that serves this rum with Mancino vermouth, the Rieger Cafe Amaro and Blackstrap Bitters, and we serve that as a Scaffa, a room temperature cocktail. It's
beautiful.
Awesome.
It's fucking delicious. So it all comes back around.
That's amazing. Yeah, it's just... this small world and even smaller industry. It's incredible.
The world doesn't get smaller, you keep getting bigger.
Oh, it's cute.
That's Damon, he's adorable.
Well, it helps you be here in New York with Penelope. I mean, she's worked at so many spots, I'm meeting so many people right now.
Yeah.
She worked at Dead Rabbit, Pouring Ribbons.
Blacktail.
Leyenda, it's just Leyenda. Like, oh my God, the world gets bigger just knowing Penelope.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
I gotta give it to all of my people that, I for example, Pouring Ribbons was like my old stomping grounds. That's where
also
I started.
Also, congrats, they just had their 6-year anniversary.
Yeah.
Last week.
On Thursday or Friday, right?
Yeah.
It was Friday.
Yeah.
Because Joaquin and I were just in Florida. Well, now we're in a different time zone.
Yeah.
They recently had their anniversary just after Joaquin and I got back from Florida.
We recorded.
Nice. Yes. Save.
Live from the future.
Speaking of good people, Joaquin, man.
Yeah, huge mentor
good,
of
good
mine.
People. Yeah.
Good people, actually. It's been a while since I've seen him. The last time I saw him was before the storm. He was doing a Heaven Hills competition. He was judging a competition
right
out there at the St. Regis. And he happened to, like, be around, and I was like, come to Penultima. Actually, I wasn't working there yet, but...
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was like
I geeked out a little bit. Like,
Penultima was already a place you like to go and hang out, so you would invite someone to come there. So
that was my hangout spot on my breaks from Jungle Bird, the tiki bar down the street.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, this is a real bar. This is the bar. This is the bar I actually want to work at.
Jungle Bird's
and
a great bar too.
It's a great bar.
Jungle Bird,
but
ours,
this is my home. Like I finally found a home, and this is a beautiful place for me to work at, and I have the opportunity to, like, you know, explore what I like to do, and
mm-hmm.
I have the freedom to do it. And, you know, obviously, like I said before, like, Steven and I work really well together, hand in hand. We just understand each other, so I'm just really happy.
That's great. That's
awesome.
Great.
And that's a great testament to...
Fucking cheers to that, y'all.
Oh, yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
And honestly, people, like, you know, traveling around the States and, you know, whatever, Puerto Rico is on the map right now, but doesn't get so much credit. And it's like, it's owed a lot of credit. There's some incredible people there doing incredible... It's not just Penultima. There's other cool cocktail bars opening up. You know, Jungle Bird, she worked at, owned by some friends of ours, also in La Factoria, which people may have heard of, got on the 50 best list, you know?
No, and they're great, too.
They're great.
We just participated in their five-year anniversary. They brought in a bunch of bars. They did two nights of a five-year anniversary, which was really cool.
One for the local
bars. They had five different local bars take over. Because Factory, it's a complex of bars. There's literally five bars, or six bars, within where you can get through and pass through. And they're all different bars with different programs.
It's a little maze.
It's crazy. It's a great place. And we got to do a guest shift one night, and it was us, it was Santea, Jungle Bird, Gallo Negro, and Cateria. But then the next day, they brought in bartenders from the world. There was Trailer Happiness was there.
The Clumsies
were there. Herbs and Rye, Spotty was down there.
Lementor was supposed
Lementor
to be there, but they got... United States, man. They got held at the border.
They couldn't get into the country from Mexico. Shamefully. Yeah.
Well, I was going to ask, so what would your advice be for any of our listeners or like bartenders out there who like want to come and visit, like,
Puerto Rico is not far away.
If anybody doesn't know, Puerto Rico is part of the United States.
That's
you do not need a visa to travel there. You do not need to speak Spanish. Everyone is bilingual down there.
Yes.
It accepts the U.S. dollar. It's about as easy as...
Going to Florida.
What the fuck have we
all over bartenders. It's
I'm Googling.
Next time you're thinking,
maybe
you're gonna go to Orlando. Don't go to Puerto Rico.
Go to Puerto Rico. It'll cost the same. And
it'll have a better time.
And if you need any more help, just look us up and we'll help you out.
Of course.
Yeah, Damon and I'll come down and make some bitter gin drinks for you.
That'd be great.
Bring some coconuts.
bitter flavors are actually a big thing in the local palate. People grow up drinking like really sour toronja, grapefruit juice, you know, passion fruit. We don't get a lot of Amaros yet. We're still building the kind of, we're still trying to convince our distributors that yes, we do want this. Yes, we will sell it.
Yeah, convince them that there's demand and
there
we will get supply.
But anytime we do anything, you know, sour or bitter, people love it.
We smuggle chartreuse.
Don't say that in the air.
No, I would never do such a thing.
I would never smuggle booze into Puerto Rico. I would never do that.
No.
My suitcase comes back empty every trip.
So that's like the weird thing where, like in the Caribbean, like a lot of people don't like whenever you picture it, and like most people do, they picture just like a bunch of like tropical fruits and fruity drinks and stuff like that. But like, isn't it like in Jamaica, isn't like Ray and Nephew and like
Campari. Ray and Ting. Ray and Ting.
Ray and Ting, but then there's like a Campari sure. Ray and Nephew soda thing.
Yeah, and the Campari there is actually
higher proof. Guinness is like huge there. Like
Campari
like,
in Jamaica is actually higher proof than here too. So yeah, they're like Ray and Nephew and high proof Campari.
That's awesome, man.
It's like go time.
We need to take some trips out of...
Listen, man. I'm saving up for a boat.
I know some great harbors.
Steven and I went on a boat trip together, actually, to the BBS. We have a passion for boat riding, actually.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, rad. Yeah, it's no secret that my ultimate retirement plan is to live on a boat in the Caribbean.
All right. Well,
I'm on that same boat.
Otis on his sailboat.
When?
Well, we're supposed to do November, but I think it's going to be early next year.
Oh, is Stephen Florence? Yeah, man. I talked to him last time.
We should do that.
Yes.
And go to Puerto Rico. A couple shows.
Yeah.
Dude, we can hit Puerto Rico. We can go to Martinique. We can go to like...
We've been doing Speakeasy on the road. We could do Speakeasy.
All right, we're closed.
High seas.
La Pinocchio will be closed for a week. We're going to go with them to Martinique.
Yes. Oh, they're doing that? I didn't know that.
Yeah,
Pinocchio
was closing. Pinocchio is closing for a week sometime next year, and we're just going to Martinique with these guys.
Yeah. All right.
Speaking of which, I did just break you. But...
All right, hey.
We'll do it in a canoe.
It's a boat. If you want to make one, can I commission you to
make it? You can make it for you.
Yeah, it'll be in Puerto Rico waiting for you.
All right, fair enough. I'll just paddle it back to Puerto
Rico. You've already got the canoe. What might be nice is some really well-styled-out oars.
Mm-hmm.
Some handmade oars.
That sounds nice. That'd be nice, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, all right, done.
And then you can keep one behind the bar. That's the manager. Instead of the standard baseball bat, you can have a handmade oar.
Now, have you seen my Louisville Slugger bat bar? Nah, never mind. We'll talk about that later.
We all have that. That's our manager over there. It's
the hammer. Beautiful. Yeah.
That's from Luke's company.
Yeah, it's from Bull in China.
Bull in China.
Yeah. Anyway, well, we are definitely trailing off. How much alcohol is in this room?
A lot.
And can I have some more?
We haven't finished the bottle. I mean,
the bottle's... It's still over half.
Yeah, I mean, technically it has a wine product in it, and if you don't finish it, it goes bad.
That's right. Exactly. We have to finish it right now. What time is it? Like 1 o'clock now?
Yes, it's fenced now,
you know.
It just has wine product. Yeah, this is almost a Negroni, basically.
It's delicious. It's a bottled cocktail.
It's really
cool
stuff. It's a rum Manhattan. Mm-hmm. Well, guys, let's cut towards the end of the show here and talk about things that are so how people can find you and get in touch with you. What's your Instagram?
Handle on Facebook and Instagram is Bar Penultima. Always one
Penultima,
word.
Penultima.
Penultima. You got an Instagram or anything like
that? Yep. At Bar Penultima.
Oh, all of it. Penultima.
At Bar Penultima.
That makes it easy.
Yeah.
You got personal ones you want to share or no? You can keep that to yourself if you want.
I'm Hopstems.
I'm Pepe LaFunk.
I'm Hoppy.Christopher.
Hoppy.Christopher.
Funny story, my sister's...
Pepe LaFunk.
My sister's made me my Instagram probably about 8 years ago because I was just not getting it on the train early enough, so they picked my name for
there
me.
There you go.
It. might have made a noise.
Man, it's really cool. Like, we get to hang out like a few months ago or a couple months ago, whatever it was, back in Kentucky.
Yeah, Camp Runamuck.
So it's... I feel like...
That was a couple weeks ago.
It was something.
It was this year.
At time of recording.
We got a lot of wrong today. But it's like, it's kind of like fun bouncing around and like seeing you guys in different places. And definitely we'll be seeing you. We need to go.
You guys are coming out?
We're going to Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
Yes.
We can set up a bunch of interviews and make it a Make Heritage Radio.
We'll like redo our Cleveland trip.
Yeah, more Caribbean. Yes.
Yeah.
That could be cool.
So much cool stuff from the Cleveland trip.
The Cleveland of...
the Cleveland of the
I think there's actually a place in Puerto Rico called El Porco, right? It's like a little food truck in Santurce.
Oh,
okay.
Porco, like the food, though, right? Porco Lounge in Cleveland, Stefan Waz.
We got some of the best roasted pig in the world down there, so...
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Speaking my language.
There you go.
As a former chef and former butcher...
Ooh,
whoa,
man. We got the perfect place for you. We got this place up in the hills.
Cooking and eating pigs are kind of my jam.
They're open only 2 days a week, 4 hours a day for both of those days. And it's the best pig you'll ever have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
2 days a week, 4 hours a day. It's an 8 hour week.
El Guavate? In El Guavate?
No, this isn't Aguas Buenas.
Get a little buzzed.
This rum is really fucking good.
It is, right?
But it's also, it's drinking, like, it's got, like, some aromatics to it, like, from the vermouth, like, So it's just drinking like a rum Manhattan.
Yeah, really does. Man, like there is a renaissance in the drink industry in Puerto Rico right now. It's not just commodity fucking mass produced like rum for export. They're doing some really cool innovative things right now. Huh? It's not just this. There's other bottlings coming out that hopefully you're gonna blow your mind too, and mine as well. I haven't tried it yet. Well,
Don Q rocking it out with Giancarlo Mancino.
Well, we'll come down to your bar and we'll do an episode from there. We can plug in our equipment because sure. You have the generator at your bar, so we'll make sure the batteries don't go dead.
Yeah, before we walk away though, how are things? Are things getting back to normal? Is it normalizing?
Absolutely.
It's normalizing. Yeah. So yeah. The electrical authority announced a month ago in August that 100% of power is back to all homes. Probably a couple that are left out, but really
like
things are back
ago
to normal.
Or something like that, where like the last person honestly, got their power.
Honestly,
back.
What Puerto Rico needs is more tourism right now.
Yeah.
Lot of people are afraid to come down. A lot of people think.
Yeah.
That they're
gonna a lot of people see that there's still a couple hotels are closed. The Hilton
like,
is still closed because they're rebuilding it from scratch, basically. There's things like that, but it doesn't mean that the island's not ready for visitors. That's why we're here. That's why we're doing the pop up at Leyenda. It's been a year since the hurricane. We're back in business, and like it's a beautiful place, and the people have just gotten even nicer and better.
Yeah.
And it's time for everybody
and
to come show up.
Puerto
and like,
Rico, it's part of America.
Yeah,
underrepresented in a lot of ways.
The hurricane was
sure.
not the Democrats' fault.
And we want we want everybody to come, but we really want the industry to come out and show us some love.
Of course,
too, you know?
Of course. Like it's what I was saying earlier.
You get everybody, right?
Puerto exactly. Rico, like obviously, like you know, I'm not born in Puerto Rico. I don't have Puerto Rican parents, but I feel so attached and so in love with the island that I feel Puerto Rican like in my like you know in my heart, and like I just every time like you know I see somebody like you know oh it's not that I want to work there or like oh it's not worth it in Puerto Rico, that's not going to work. Yes, it will. Puerto Rico is a fucking incredible place. The people are amazing, with incredible palates and open to all sorts of experiences, and it's a really dynamic, crazy, beautiful, amazing place. And really, you just got to see it for yourself.
Yeah.
Well, words ain't going to describe it.
Well, let's talk about that then. Everybody listening, get yourself some vacation time and head to Puerto Rico. It's easy to get to. It's inexpensive. It's beautiful, and they need you. So let's all go to Puerto Rico.
Hell yeah.
Let's do that.
Cheers to that. Salud.
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 You want to take us out,
yeah,
baby?
Yeah, yeah.
Cheers.
So the next year of the speakeasy will be... It'll be recorded from Puerto Rico.
We'll find a pool side.
Yeah. Find a hammock. Find a hammock in the boat.
You'll find a lot of hammocks.
The 15-minute pauses are just naps. It's okay.
Yeah,
it's normal.
It's fine. It's chill.
There's still a lot.
Super chill. I'm used to it now. Still in California.
You drink when you wake up, basically.
Oh, you don't have to.
What's changed?
Yeah, we already do that.
Anyway, that's it for the speakeasy this week. Thanks so much for being on the show. It's lovely to have you here. You're awesome people, and it sounds like everything's...
Yeah, a lot of good energy.
Great. Yeah, really great energy. Cool things coming up. And thanks for keeping the community together. That's like the most important
thing.
Hey,
thank you for having us. We're fans of the show. We love your guys' projects, your bars.
Yeah.
Thanks
happy
so
to be here.
Thank you.
It's an honor.
All right, well...
Thank you, guys.
Next time we see you, hopefully, like it'll be in Puerto Rico.
I hope so as well.
All right, that's it for the Speakeasy this week. Check out Heritage Radio Network for many more programs like this one. Click on the beating heart to donate to the station to keep us drinking rum with our friends. And until next week, salud!
Salud!
You don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you started.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.